COVID-19 changed a lot of things. The Times newspaper reported on Monday that a study of 80 offices in 13 countries representing 80,000 employees has revealed a seismic shift in working patterns, with two-thirds of desks unused on an average day. Due to the pandemic, the hybrid working genie is out of the bottle. Old routines have been jettisoned. The world has moved on. Old certainties reshaped. And of course the church has been caught up in this. We discovered that when we reopened the church after 18 months of restrictions, that what used to happen could no longer happen. And that in fact we had quite forgotten what used to happen, where things were kept, what processes and procedures used to be. Old traditions shelved in the light of changed times. You couldn't sit where you'd sat for decades. You couldn't use the common cup. The bread came with little wooden sticks. For a time, there was no going upstairs for coffee. The printed order of service looked different. It was almost like starting over. When my family moved from the heart of Glasgow's East End to one of Scotland's famous, infamous new towns, East Kilbride, we became pioneer members of a new Baptist church that was being started to win the hearts and minds of all the new people coming to live in a new town. Everything was new. There were no traditions except for a traditional Baptist West of Scotland Protestant distrust of Catholics, a disapproval of divorce, a distaste towards homosexuality, and a total downer on women ministers. But apart from that, it was pretty much a haven of free-thinking, open-mindedness. Because it was such a new church, there had been no time to form traditions. It was all put together on the spot, happening in the now. No yesterday to serve as a point of reference. When I saw the light and joined the Church of Scotland and became a candidate for ministry, I was sent to St Cuthbert's Parish Church in Edinburgh for reprogramming. St Cuthbert's, an historic church that had been in the centre of Edinburgh since the 13th century. It was, without doubt, for me, something of a culture shock. Elders in tail coats, a raft of distinguished High Court judges on the session, high church liturgy, and long-established traditions seeping through the walls. It was for me a thorough education on the pluses and minuses of tradition. There are those who would seem happy to discard all tracings and trappings of the past, all traces, all trappings of the past, music, dress codes, preaching style, church architecture, old hymns, as if the church began in 1990 at the earliest. New wine, new wineskins, all change is good, the past is an encumbrance, move on and move forward fast, is the mantra. I'm not sure those who speak like that really understand tradition, that it is inevitable. You can't beat the time factor. After 2,000 years, there is bound to be some excess baggage accumulated en route. And surely a few things, a few precious things garnered along the way that are too important just to discard on a whim without reflection on why they're there and why they've come to be so valued over the years. Our traditions foster a sense of belonging, a shared past that means something and binds people together. By clarifying through our traditions who we are and what we do and how we do it, we have a measure that enables us to sense who's moving outside the boundaries, who's taking us into areas that are alien to those values and that shared understanding. Who has gone off message, who is a heretic, and who is orthodox. And for those comparisons to be made, we need to have norms, standards, plumb lines. And because of those long years, because what happens with time is that traditions evolve, it's pretty much impossible to avoid traditions developing. Even within those churches that might want to consider themselves tradition-free, they have ways of praying, how they use the word just, O Lord, we just want to say. The particular style and sound of their music, the little incursions of tradition that creep in, largely unnoticed by those who are part of it, but easily spotted by those who come in fresh. Traditionally, we have no traditions. It's how secular it becomes very easily. COVID was a great destroyer of those recent man-made traditions. Because by the time we came back to church, no one could quite remember what we did back then, 2 years ago, and who did them. There are benefits, as we've hinted, to traditions rightly placed. They can generate a sense of order and structure, avoiding chaos, confusion and unease. If you know it's going to happen in a certain way that is familiar and in a good way, that's comfortable. If you're operating in a secure setting, then this releases energy that would otherwise be gobbled up by anxiety and uncertainty, and the focus is more easily maintained, a feeling of familiarity without unexpected and unsought surprises provides a creative context for any activity. And the fact that we can, without too much thought, walk one foot in front of the other enables us to cover good distances and look at the mountains. That respect for tradition enables us to feel a creative continuity with the past and to honour it with our attention and our respect, our willingness to use the best of it in creative and enriching ways. We're not tied to it, but we're certainly not disrespecting it by our casual dismissal of everything that happened then in favour of only doing what we do now. Some ideas are too important not to be preserved. And that's not the same as them being embalmed. They can remain living elements in our worship and in our church life, even if they are aspects that go back a very long way indeed. How impoverished our experience would be, how at risk our world would be, if only those ideas less than 30 years old were considered worth listening to. Only those poems written in the 20th century were taught at school. But people say Jesus was all against tradition, wasn't he? He was the new wine that caused the old wineskins to burst. So strong was the pressure his new ideas put on the old systems, structures, rules and regulations. Well, it's easy to caricature his attitude to the ancient faith and imply that he was only about overturning the cluttered tables of tradition. But it doesn't take very long to see that it was the abuse of the ancient faith that concerned him. The accretions that have been allowed to grow around it and suffocate the life from it. When the laws and accumulated regulations, the ancient small print traditions, become an end in themselves, there is every likelihood that what was meant to liberate and direct towards the light becomes a burden to carry and a distraction from the truth. That kind of tradition is suffocating and makes for a formalism that can replace real commitment, real connecting, real love for God. Just because we do it right does not mean necessarily that we belong to him or love him. Going through the motions, following the rule book, simply emphasizes the truth that appearances can be deceptive, and the look of piety, if it's missing the compassion that needs to undergird that piety, as evidenced by the reaction of the self-righteous religious purists to the healing of the woman on the Sabbath, reveals a problem. You can almost hear the disbelief and outrage as Jesus listens to them, condemning him for his loving act of grace. Whatever they believe, it seems, however correctly they believe, it doesn't engage the heart. People are looking through the telescope from the wrong end, and instead of seeing the big picture, get caught up in overstating the importance of the minutiae. Or to change the imagery, people might have the words, but oh, they don't have the music. When we start to think that man was made for the Sabbath instead of the other way round, when we have a beautifully articulated liturgical words, but not warm, loving actions, when we have theology but not compassion, when how we do things is allowed to be and to become more important than why we do them, and when procedures become more important than people, then we have allowed, for whatever well-meaning reasons, we have allowed form to overwhelm content. Outward form to displace the reality of inner gut feeling. Christ risks the wrath of the watchers, the righteous rule keepers, by healing on the Sabbath. These actions demonstrate that when it all comes down to it, there's nothing more important in the equation than people. Not traditions, not process, not formalism, people. It creeps up on you unnoticed. Traditionally, we sit in the same seat Sunday by Sunday. We have an order of service that we don't want mucked about too much, and we get upset if it is. Usually, we sing that hymn to this tune. We've always had this event on that date. This is how we've always done this. We do things this way here. And before we know it, traditions are ingrained in the character of a congregation, and while some are better than others, some are not helpful at all. For example, we may have developed a tradition in the Church of Scotland that our faith is very private, that we don't speak much about our faith to other people. We have our personal traditions. And that might mean we don't meet with others after coffee, for coffee afterwards. We don't feel it's our thing to speak with visitors and make them feel welcome. We are heirs of a great and rich heritage. Here, more than in most places, you can feel history throb through the stonework. And of course we're keepers of that heritage, privileged and honoured so to be. However, those who passed on that heritage to us would not want it to become an end in itself, and we are not here to preserve a museum to a grand past, but to be a church for our times. In all the risk and untidiness of that, in all the rich, boisterous, mistake-making, lesson-learning, rainbow vibrancy of being a living church in 21st century Geneva. The question is, where do we start? Do we start from form and formalism and add humanity to taste? Or do we start with humanity and add form where we need to? No one wants church to be a bear garden with chaos and disruption, uncertainty and drift as the unsettling constants of our worship life. No one wants one-dimensional worship driven by a single style or tone. The history of the church is too rich and diverse for that ever to be right or enough or healthy. When worship and service come from the heart and from the people we are living in today's world, that will inevitably find expression in how we worship and how we seek to serve Christ, using the past and our inestimable debt to it as a platform, a springboard, an inspiration, to find ways of being the church that will draw seekers in, fill pilgrims with purpose, and truly, in our day, in this place, honour the Lord we serve and love.